Imagine you're tasked with holding up this massive life-saving safety net for millions of people. But as you look down at it, you realize almost a third of the ropes are just missing.
Yeah, that is literally the reality we're looking at here.
Right. Welcome to today's deep dive into the Western Cape Department of Social Development's 2024-25 Citizens Report. Our mission today is to uncover exactly how a regional government department actively empowers the vulnerable, you know, even when operating under intense pressure.
And about those missing ropes, we're talking about a department operating with a staggering 29.5% staff vacancy rate.
Which is huge. So how does a net missing almost 30% of its ropes catch anyone? Looking at the operational machinery, they have 2,416 employees across 53 local offices.
Okay.
And their biggest budget chunk is social welfare at just over 1.1 billion rand. But here is my issue. The report proudly highlights their 14th consecutive clean financial audit from the Auditor General.
Yeah, 14 years.
Wait, but they also partially fund over 1,000 independent nonprofits. Outsourcing your core mandate to 1,000 different external groups sounds, I mean, like an absolute recipe for a financial leakage.
You would think so, right?
Yeah. How on earth are they getting clean audits when the money is that decentralized?
Well, it's because they aren't trying to fly every plane themselves. Think of the department as an air traffic controller.
Okay, I like that analogy.
Right. They aren't in the cockpit doing the on-the-ground flying. They are directing the flow, managing the airspace, and ensuring the planes, which are the MPOs, get to the right destinations.
Without crashing, hopefully.
Exactly. That extreme decentralization is the actual mechanism. By delegating the execution to vetted community partners, they can maintain strict financial governance centrally.
While leaning on the agility of local organizations to actually deliver the services. So the air traffic controller model allows them to scale.
It really does.
And looking at the numbers, the scale of care is huge. I mean, they're managing over 42,600 active foster care cases.
With 3,018 new placements just this year alone.
Wow. And funding 25 shelters for 2,042 victims of gender-based violence. Plus, what, over 24,000 people accessing psychosocial support?
Yeah, 24,464 to be exact.
But I want to pause on the interventions themselves, because it's not just, you know, generalized cash handouts. It is highly tactical.
Very targeted, yeah.
For instance, sending over 15,200 boxes of sanitary pads to schools, like 15,209 to be precise.
Let's look at why that specific tactic is used. Supplying sanitary pads isn't just a basic health initiative. It's an economic lever.
How so?
Well, when girls lack those supplies, they miss days of school. And chronic absenteeism leads to higher dropout rates.
Which directly translates to lower lifetime earnings.
Exactly. And a higher likelihood of needing permanent state assistance later on. So it's drastically cheaper and, like, infinitely more effective for the government to provide the pads now.
Right. Rather than manage the long-term economic fallout of a dropout later. That makes perfect sense. It's the exact same logic behind providing subsidized meals to 22,100 vulnerable people at community nutrition centers.
Yes, exactly. You aren't just rescuing someone for a day.
You're creating the baseline stability a family needs to eventually become self-reliant.
Precisely. They're engineering stability from the ground up.
Okay, so they are keeping families stable right now with these tactical moves. But what happens to the teenagers who are, you know, already slipping through those missing ropes?
That's the tough part.
Right. How does this decentralized model handle the youth already clashing with the justice system?
Well, that is where their restorative services branch steps in, backed by our $531.7 million.
Okay, that's a significant chunk of change.
It is. They formally assessed 5,404 children in conflict with the law, and they admitted 816 artists into secure facilities.
So instead of just letting the traditional punitive justice system take over, which we know often hardens young offenders, the department assesses how to divert them.
Exactly. For example, 7,452 clients received treatment for substance use disorders.
So they are actively intercepting the trajectory.
Yes, because if you treat the underlying trauma or addiction driving the behavior, you are actively breaking the generational cycle of poverty. You stop the cycle before it cements itself into their adult lives.
Wow.
And for those who aren't in the system, they provide proactive alternatives, like 14,856 young people accessed skills training at youth cafes.
Giving them a tangible pathway into the economy instead of the streets.
Right. It's a two-pronged strategy, a safety guardrail for those falling off track and a ladder for those climbing up.
You know, if you have ever looked at a struggling local government and assumed that Like, throwing more money at the problem and hiring thousands more staff was the only fix.
Which is what most people think.
Right. But this model completely flips that assumption on its head. Effective social welfare doesn't require doing everything in-house. It requires strict central governance paired with incredibly deep tactical community integration.
Which really leaves us with a compelling question for you to ponder. If a government department missing nearly 30% of its staff can still serve hundreds of thousands of people.
And secure 14 years of clean audits through community partnerships.
Exactly. Is this decentralized NPO-reliant model actually the ultimate blueprint for the future of government social work?
I mean, maybe that safety net doesn't need every single rope to hold strong, you know, as long as it's anchored firmly to the right community. Definitely something for you to think about.